Welcome to Raw, where we hear true, unfiltered stories from real women in the actuarial profession. For the next half hour, you get to hear stories, advice, and all the latest tea from some of the industry's best and brightest, wondering how the highest paid women asked for raises, how they became the first woman in their company's C-suite, how allies can help them on their journeys. Get it all directly from the women who've lived it. This is Raw. Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of Raw. Today, I have joining me Kristen Long. She has been working in the industry for 8 years now. In her day job, she is currently the director actuary for the Colonial Life Financial Planning and Analysis Department at Unum. She volunteers as the VP of Partnerships for the Network of Actuarial Women and Allies organization, which this podcast is sponsored through, where she's responsible for creating financial sustainability for NAWA through partnerships and sponsorships. She also volunteers with the SOA, most recently supporting the new education pathway initiatives. She's super passionate about mentoring and mentors many of her peers within the actuarial industry. And when she's not working or volunteering, she enjoys spending her time shopping, exercising, reading, and spending time with friends and family. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you, Lizzie, for having me.
All right, Kristen, I'm going to start us off with the same question we ask everybody. How did being a woman influence your career as an actuary?
Well, when starting out, I didn't even think of being a woman as being kind of a barrier to entering this field or any field, quite frankly, which I think is a good thing.
Yes.
But that being said, you know, it's one of those things where throughout my career, I can see it being an issue at times. Thankfully, probably not as much as it has been historically, but also I think it's a little bit how you were raised, a little bit what company you work for, a little bit of, you know, your environment, because as I've moved throughout my career, I've been very supported by friends and mentors and allies. I also work for a company that really promotes inclusion and diversity and learning and development for everyone across the organization. So I think that's really helped because I have friends and other people that I know where things have been a little bit harder. And I think a little bit of that is just the kind of product of their environment. So hopefully we're trending in the right direction, but we'll see, I guess.
Is the company you work for, do they have a pretty equal gender balance of women and men actuaries?
I think so. It fluctuates, obviously, but it's pretty balanced. And I know, like, when I started, it was a little bit more uneven, but they were really trying to be very conscious about that. And the kind of like hiring class I started in was 50-50 split. And I think it's been pretty even throughout the years. So that's been really good. And we've got an actuarial development program that's very focused on making sure we've got very strong, well-rounded actuaries kind of across the board. So thankfully, from that perspective, it's fairly standardized, and you know the very clear expectations of what you are supposed to be doing. And, you know, they're very supportive in helping you pass the exams and everything like that, which I think just really helps kind of everyone start out on equal footing.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think what I've noticed in a couple of these interviews is the women actuaries who are like, I didn't really think about being a woman, are the ones who like worked for companies that were really intentional about diversity and had a pretty equal gender balance. Because I think you have to be intentional about it, because if you're not, you end up with departments that have like 2 women out of 50. And those are the women who are like, oh yeah, I was thinking about the fact that I was a woman because I was one of two.
Exactly. So I think that's definitely really helpful. And I think I'd encourage anyone who's kind of starting out to be very aware of that for companies that they are applying to.
Yeah, that's definitely a factor I consider whenever I'm going to a new job. It's like, do you have women or is it going to be a bunch of dudes that I'm working with?
Yeah, for sure.
So tell me about the development program your company does and how that's helped you.
Yeah. So part of it is, you know, really focusing on building out the skills that you need to kind of continue to grow in your career. So that's a very big focus. Obviously, the exams are a very big focus and a component of that, but that's, I'm going to say, more or less standard kind of across the industry. So we can maybe focus on the first piece a little bit more. But with that, it's kind of a blend of, you know, your, I'm going to say, traditional technical actuarial skills. Then there's, you know, your more soft skills and then your business acumen. But then they also really focus on the mentorship and building relationships and networks, which I think is really good and a really big part of your career that I think sometimes gets a little bit overshadowed. Because if you tend to show up very strong from a technical perspective as an actuary, which is, I think, historically how we're viewed, you can kind of get pigeonholed pretty quickly into very traditional technical actuarial roles, which are great, and we need those actuaries.
For sure.
But there's lots of awesome opportunity to kind of go anywhere in a company because you've got your very traditional actuarial roles, like a pricing or a valuation, very modeling heavy type role. But then I've had a lot of really cool opportunities to be in more business facing roles or kind of more broad finance roles, which are really fun because you still get to use all of the skills that you build as an actuary, you know, all of the critical thinking skills and the kind of risk analysis and the, you know, is this the best business decision for the risk appetite that we have?
Right.
And so by being at a company that has allowed me to kind of rotate through different areas of the business, learn what I like, what I'm good at, maybe what I need to work on, give me opportunities to work on those things, but also really find like what I'm passionate about and how I can really show up and add value to a team has actually kind of led to a really cool, I'm going to say, self-discovery moment of like, development is great and you need to work on things. So that way, you know, something's not holding you back, but also being able to like lean into the things that you're actually really good at is how you can kind of get further in your career. Cause it's like, okay, I've worked on the things that, you know, could hold me back, but so I can do them, but I don't have to be the best at them because there are other people, other actuaries that I can partner with on projects or what have you, that are much better than me at those things, but we can work well together because I've got skills they don't have.
Yeah.
And so together we can better solve the problem or work on the project. So like one of the things that I've really tried to, you know, instill in some of the people that I mentor is like, what do you bring to the table? What is it you are the best at? Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to also, you know, kind of give them the empowerment to say, you're allowed to be the best at something. And you're allowed to say that out loud because I feel like as women, we've been traditionally told, you know, to be a little bit less than, to be a little bit quieter than, and like try and minimize your thoughts and your opinions and how you show up in meetings. And I've been really trying to change that for the women that I mentor because I think it's so powerful to say, I'm the best at this. And here's what I can bring to your team. Because if you go to interview for that next promotion, that next job, whatever it is, you can say, here's what I will do for your team better than everyone else. And that confidence that you can bring is amazing.
Yeah.
And it shows up so well with, you know, employers, but then just the people around you, because it's a very positive energy because it's not saying that they're bad at something if you are good at something. It's just, hey, here's what I can bring to the table. Because then you can then ask, what do you bring to the table?
Right. I think that's so important, especially for women in a male-dominated field. I feel like there's this tendency of women to just be focusing on proving they belong. And so just kind of doing the mainstream thing, just passing exams, doing very traditional work, just to prove that, like, we deserve to be in this field as women. And I think it's so important to go the step beyond and be like, not only do we deserve to be here, we contribute actively to this field. And, like, I think that's, there's so much power in diversity, not just for women, but also of different, like, racial, sexuality, like all the different brands of diversity. Because, like, we really do bring different skills to the table that are so important and make the field better. Like, when I started out in this industry, I was also doing very traditional actuarial work. I was doing pricing segmentation, and, like, I was good at it. And I spent a lot of time proving to people that I was good at it, but I didn't really like it. And I, you know, when I recognized that, I was like, why am I working so hard to prove that I can do this? I know I can do this. Everybody else knows I can do this, but, like, this isn't what, like, lights a fire in me. And that's when I transitioned more into doing, like, data science stuff. And also this podcast, like, I had people in college who would, like, kind of poke fun at me as, oh, Lizzie's the girl who's good at math and can maintain eye contact, which was funny. But
I got a similar piece of feedback in college where it was like, you are not the stereotypical actuary. And I started going, thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so glad.
Because I think there's this tendency of, like, if you're not the stereotypical actuary, it's like, oh, you don't belong to be here because you're not like everybody else. But it's like, no, I very much belong to be here. And because I'm not like everybody else, I can contribute in a different way.
Right. And I've gotten so much joy out of that, that I'm not the stereotypical actuary. And, you know, a bunch of the people that I work with, and I love them, and I know that they care about me deeply when they say this, because it's, you know, teasing out of love a little bit, where they're like, you are not a strong technical actuary. Like, doing data science, I'm like, I understand it. You can talk to me about it. And I think it's super cool. But if you made me go sit and do data science every day, I'd probably cry. Like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
I love getting to do more, like, project management and work with different business partners, trying to actively solve problems, like, and make business decisions. And I really discovered that when I worked in our corporate actuarial department, and I got to, you know, help coordinate year-end reporting across valuation teams. And it was, I was like, this is my jam. This is my element. Like, please give me more of this. And it was so fun. And then I was able to, you know, get a lot of really great feedback and kind of mentorship from some pretty senior actuaries who, like, really valued my skill of being able to see a process end to end. And I was able to make a lot of recommendations of how to enhance the process to not only make it less painful selfishly for me, but for everyone else involved, because it was very manual. Mm-hmm. And now it's not. And, you know, there's still manual components, because I think there will always be manual components to things. Because actuaries like to, you know, sometimes make actuarial judgment and adjustments, but for the most part, it's so much easier to do now, because I recognized it and I spoke up and I said, hey, I have a crazy idea. Can you hear me out? And they were like, yes, please, let's talk about it. And it was amazing, because that really showed me that, like, my opinions are valuable. The work that I do is also valuable. Mm-hmm. Because I basically automated my job. Like, my old job does not exist in the same form that it does today, which is really cool. And so that's kind of led to, you know, how do I do the technical actuarial work, but still also bring in the components of project management that I like doing. So I've worked in pricing, and it was, okay, yeah, I do the pricing work, but I'm the one going to the meetings with our products department and our underwriters and whatever, and communicating all of the changes and working with them to make sure it works for the different stakeholders, and we can do reporting on it, and we can sell it, and we can you know, do whatever we need to do with it. And that's been a lot of fun.
Right. And those roles are equally important to doing the manual technical stuff, because you can have people who can do the manual technical stuff all day long, but if you can't sell the product or explain the product, then like, it doesn't go anywhere. So like, those skills are just as important.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I was going to say, so one of the other things that I've kind of learned throughout some of my mentoring, and I'm pretty sure I mentor just about everybody at work in some capacity, but I love it. I get a lot of joy out of it, and I always encourage other people to mentor others. And some of the things that I've been picking up on over the last couple of years is, you know, in a similar way of being able to show up and say, you know, having an opinion is good, and also being comfortable saying I'm the best at something. Mm-hmm. Along that same vein, I've noticed a lot of women struggle with setting boundaries, and clear boundaries of, here's what I'm going to do, here's what I'm not going to do, especially when it comes to, like, some teams might be a little bit more skewed one gender versus another or something. And, you know, sometimes is it, was I asked to take notes because I'm the woman in the room, or is it I'm being asked to take notes because it's my turn, or I'm better at it than some other people? Because, you know, some of those other reasons are fine, but there's always that like lingering question. And so one of the things I've started recommending to these people that I mentor is, you can say, okay, I will take notes this time, but then we're going to rotate so this person takes it next time and we rotate around the room. Or if it's, hey, you're asking me to take notes because you're presenting, when I present, can you take notes? Like, just have that conversation. It doesn't need to be awkward. And they've, I think, found a lot of success in that.
Yeah.
But then also, like, as some of my mentees have started becoming managers, one thing that I've started to notice as well is like, they're really scared that they're being mean when they give feedback. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, half of them are like the nicest people that I've ever met in my entire life. And I'm like, there's no way you would ever be considered mean. But one thing I found that tends to resonate with more people is a Brené Brown quote, and it's, clear is kind and unclear is unkind. Mm-hmm. And so when I kind of framed feedback in that way for them, it was a lot more helpful, because I said, look, feedback doesn't have to be you did bad at this thing. It can be, okay, when you kick off a project or when you get a new person on your team, you can go through and say, here are my expectations of you on this project, in this job, for the next 6 months, like fill in as you need. But here's my expectations. And if you don't meet them, I will let you know and we will be addressing it.
Yeah.
And that's all you're doing. You're just being very clear and explicit with where things are at, because then if they are not meeting your expectations that you've said out loud and just aren't in your head, then you are very much allowed to give the feedback of, hey, you aren't meeting my expectations. What are you going to do differently next time? So that way we can meet the expectations. Like, do you need more training? Do you need a little bit more help? Do you need guidance? You know, what is it? Let's have a conversation. Let's have a discussion. Because I did that with a prior team that I managed, and the feedback went both ways. It was like, hey, you did great. You exceeded my expectations, because we talked about it being, you know, here, and you went above and beyond. That's awesome. Like, I want to make sure you get credit for that. But then if they weren't, I could very easily come in and say, hey, you did not meet my expectations that we were very clear on. What are we going to do differently? And it went so well, because they were like, you know, I thought about it. You're right. Like, I didn't meet the expectations. I think I need a little more training.
Yeah.
okay, we can do that. Like, that's a very solvable problem. And it doesn't drag on for weeks or months or something and kind of eat at you. And they aren't getting the feedback that they need either. So, you know, really trying to make it clear to some of the women that I mentor, like, feedback doesn't have to be mean, but you also aren't their mom. Like, they're adults. You can give them feedback and it doesn't have to be in a mean way. And I think that's just, it's such a powerful thing to be able to say you're helping somebody, because if you help them get better, they're getting better and you're less stressed and you don't have to work as hard because you're not trying to overcompensate for them either. So, you know, some of those things are just so important to kind of remember.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought up the note-taking thing, because that's a conversation I've had with so many women, not just in actuarial, but in like any male-dominated department. If there's a woman, that's always the person they ask to take notes. And I'm like, it's a little bit, are you familiar with the term like weaponized incompetence?
Yes.
Yeah. I've heard so many women whose like bosses and male teammates have been like, oh, but you're just so much better at taking the notes. And it's like, no, like if you aren't capable of taking notes during a meeting, you shouldn't be in this job. Like that is such a bare minimum thing to do. And to your other point about unclear is unkind, like I know so many women who, when they get asked to take the notes every single meeting, just do it because they're like, well, we don't want to like cause a ruckus, so we'll just do it and suck it up. But then they're miserable in their jobs and they get burnt out slowly because they're not speaking up and they end up leaving. And like, that's the truly unkind thing. Like if you are not giving your male coworkers the opportunity to be better, that's unkind.
Absolutely.
Like if you are not saying and like calling out their weaponized incompetence and being like, hey, I am not actually better at taking notes. And if I am, then you should be working on that skill and improving. Let me give you the opportunity to grow and get better at note taking, because that's a good skill to have. And if you're not speaking up and you're just suffering in silence and then you leave a job because you're miserable and you didn't give people the opportunity to do better for themselves and for you, that's what's truly unkind.
Absolutely.
Suffering in silence is not kind to anyone.
No, and it's not helping either, because actually one of the beautiful things that my husband's been teaching me is a lot of times, you know, men just don't clock it.
Yes.
And they'd be totally willing to change or alter behavior, but you have to call it out so they know.
You have to tell them.
And like, actually, one of the, you know, one of my awesome mentees at work, her and one of her other colleagues came to me and they were like, hey, our manager keeps talking over us in meetings. And I'm like, okay, your manager's not a mean person. He probably just doesn't realize he's doing it. Teams has a raise your hand feature. Maybe make a recommendation that if someone is talking, if you want to interrupt, ask a question, have a statement to share, whatever, you all have to use the raise your hand feature. So you're not calling anyone out, you're not making anyone uncomfortable, but everyone gets to be heard. And they started doing that and problem solved. Like, he just wasn't aware that he was doing it. And like, I don't have a problem talking over people and just kind of telling him to stop talking, mm-hmm. if that's the case. But like, that's just a personal preference. Like, these yeah. people were more uncomfortable with that. And I was like, there are alternative solutions to this problem. And they don't have to be aggressive
right.
or mean. Again, like going back to the clear is kind, it's like, give them an opportunity to do better, because right. most people are willing to do it.
Yeah. And if you give people that opportunity to do better and you advocate for, you know, let's use the raise hand feature, let's alternate taking notes, if people do call you mean for that, or if they're not willing to engage in that, that's a team you shouldn't be on. So like, it's always better to advocate, because if they react well, then great. You've given them an opportunity to grow and you've created the space where you can be comfortable being on this team and everybody can thrive and grow together. And if they don't react to it well, then that's a signal that maybe you should go somewhere else. Because if anyone calls you mean for being like, let's take turns taking notes or let's raise our hands before we talk, then like that's not a space where people are willing to grow. That's not a space where you're going to be able to grow. You should go somewhere else if anybody calls you mean for that.
Right. Like, nobody's going to think that's a mean gesture by any stretch of the imagination. So.
Well, and if they do, then get out of there. Like.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Kristen, this has been great. I'm going to transition us into our last question, which I feel like you've sort of already answered, but we'll ask it anyway, and you can either reiterate or give something new. But what's one raw piece of advice for women actuaries that you want to share?
Okay, I think I'm going to give two.
Go for it.
Because I can't decide on my favorite. But so one, we've definitely covered it. Take the time to figure out what value you bring to the table and don't be afraid to lean into that. And then secondly, you know, in the spirit of mentoring, help those behind you. Like, women have taught, there's one spot, we have to fight each other for it. But that's so not true. There are so many spots and it's awesome. And we all do better when we help each other succeed and work with each other to get stuff done. I've had so much more fun and so much joy in my job being able to work with all of my friends and be able to successfully complete projects in a way that I think if we were trying to compete against each other, it would not have been so much fun.
Yeah. Fully agreed. I love all my women actuary besties.
Always. And also the male allies, because yes. I've got a lot of those too. And they're so much fun to work with.
Thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard today, you can join NAWA to get all our latest podcasts and resources for empowering women actuaries at nawaactuaries.org. That's nawaactuaries.org. Our music is Divertimento in G by Haydn, performed by Lindley Baker, and our logo was designed by Haley Osterkorn, both women actuaries. If you're a woman actuary or ally who wants to get involved with our show, you can email us directly at ally@nawaactuaries.org. That's ally@nawaactuaries.org.